God, that might just make it to the opening.
I forgot you were still recording.
Oh, yeah.
Hello!
Fuck it. You're going to do this every week now.
What, just try and find something to do with
yeah,
the film?
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, welcome to Darren and Matt's 80s adventure.
Yeah, yeah. Welcome.
Yes, episode 45. Oh, for goodness sake. Can you guess what we're talking about this week? Yeah. Well, you should know. It's there right in front of you. Anyway, yeah, episode 45.
Yes.
This week, if you hadn't guessed,
we are talking about
The Fly. Yeah, 1986. Jeez, you want to leave the fucking mic alone?
I'm very excited.
He is excited. episode 45, 1986, The Fly, with Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis.
Yeah, my name's Matt.
And my name is Darren.
And this is our 80s adventure. Thank Woo-hoo! You very much for joining us.
Hell yeah. Yeah, just a little bit of housekeeping before we carry on. As you know, well, actually, you don't, because you're getting this in a few weeks' time. But as we're recording, things have started to get back to normal this week. Things have started to open again. So therefore, Cez is at work tonight, and the puppy is in the room with us. So if you hear any extraneous noise in the background, any squeaking or growling or barking or biting or get in your fucking basket, then you'll know why.
Yeah. But also, hopefully the dog will control themselves as well.
Hey! Don't get it.
Huh?
Huh?
Yeah, she's a little cutie. She's asleep right now.
Yeah. Let's hope she stays that way for a while.
Yes. Bless her.
Anyway, yes, as I was saying, 1986.
Mm.
Any facts? Right. Have we done any films from 86? I can't remember.
There's a few. There's a few, but I have some facts about 1986.
Well, shall we hear them?
Mm-hmm. Right then, Darren, some facts about 1986. So, one particularly close to home, I guess, for you, the privatisation of the National Bus Company begins.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, and I think Devon was one of the first in a buyout, but I think it started in 86 and concluded in 88, so the buses went all private.
Yeah. Matt says that because my dad was a bus driver for, now they were called, I think they're called Plymouth Corporation Transport at first.
Right, okay.
And then after privatisation, they became Citybus, which as far as I know, they still are now.
Right.
But I remember with lots of different things going on, and they went on strike for weeks down here.
Yeah.
But it's a very personal story, and it's very boring to everyone else. And my dad was on Spotlight.
Oh. Spotlight is not just the actors' directory here in the UK.
Oh, yeah.
It is also, it used to be, or still is.
Yeah, as far as I know.
Spotlight is a local news
BBC news programme, yeah. Yeah, that's a nice fact, that. Yeah.
Speaking of the BBC, Neighbours starts on BBC One this year.
Nice. God, that was fucking massive.
It was huge. I mean, yeah. Do you remember, because we've just done a Patreon special where we're talking about kids' TV
Patreon?
Shows.
Patreon? How do they subscribe to Patreon?
Well, just go to patreon.com/80s adventure. But your alternate, like, do you remember like singing Neighbours?
Mm.
Pick your nose and taste the flavours?
No.
Or something like, okay, just my school.
Yeah.
Right.
I know, I was in Devonport High by then, didn't you?
Oh, right. What there we are.
I was almost being thrown out of Devonport High by then.
Right, there we are. also in 1986, Phantom the Opera opens at Her Majesty's.
Yeah.
Hey, I grew up on Phantom.
Yeah. Who wrote it originally, the music?
Oh, okay.
Now, to be fair, I do like Phantom. It's one of the Lloyd Webbers that I do like.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of a lot of Lloyd Webber. I like Phantom, Sunset.
That's it for me.
Yeah, I think it got me there, actually.
No, you like that awful.
No, I like some of the music from Whistle Down the Wind, yes.
Yeah, dreadful.
But the rest of it, I mean, I'm not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Starlight Express.
Right, another thing from 1986. So Microsoft went public, making Bill Gates a very, very rich man.
The
right?
Poor bastard.
They were selling shares for $21. Right. Today, a share is worth $260. But here's the thing: I did some research. I was like, well, if you'd invested some money back then into Microsoft, right? So it split 9 times. So every time it splits, you get a double share or something like that. So if you'd like to put £1,000 in back in 1986,
yeah,
you'd have well over 10 million now.
Fucking hell.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, that is.
It's absolutely ridiculous. If you'd have bought shares in Microsoft just for £1,000 in 1986, you'd be worth tens of millions.
To be fair, though, £1,000 in 86, that was probably what now? 25 grand, maybe? I don't know. The equivalent 20? I have no idea.
I
was 11/12 years old. I have no idea of the concept of money then, really.
Well, I used to get a pound pocket money.
Ooh, get you.
Yeah.
I think mine was
1,000 weeks, mate. I could have bought a load of shares in Microsoft.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you'd invested your pound, what would it have been?
Well, more than a tenner.
I've had Cronenberg. My brain's not working now.
And, yeah, funny enough, and my last fact is Jeff Goldblum was dating rising star Gina Davis back in 1986.
Who's Jeff Goldblum?
All right, Jeff Goldblum.
Just ask.
Do you know what? Listen, we are drinking Cronenberg, and do you know why?
Because it's nice.
And it's a Cronenberg film.
See
what I did there?
I didn't register that at all. Fucking hell. Nice.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
Nice. Awesome.
There we are. Those are some facts from 1986. How about we have the charts?
The Fly was released in Canada and the USA on the 15th of August 1986. And so this week we are looking at the UK top 10 for the week commencing the 10th of August 1986. At number 10 this week, rising from last week's 17, it's It Bites and Calling All the Heroes. At number 9, down from last week's number 7, it's Find the Time from Five Star. At number 8, rising 8 places from last week's 16, it's Lulu and Shout. And falling out of the top 3 this week to number 7, it's Papa Don't Preach from Madonna. Down from number 4 to this week's number 6, it's Stan Ridgway and Camouflage. Into the top 5, up from last week's number 12, it's Gwen Guthrie and Ain't Nothing Going On But the Rent. At number 4, rising a massive 24 places from last week's 28, it's Anita Dobson and the Simon May Orchestra, Anyone Can Fall in Love. Into the top 3, down from last week's 2, it's Sunita and So Macho. At number 2, up from last week's number 5, it's Boris Gardner and I Wanna Wake Up With You. And it's a non-mover at number 1 this week for Chris de Burgh and The Lady in Red. And that was the UK Top 10 for the week commencing the 10th of August, 1986. It's all right, isn't
it? I've never seen you looking so lovely as you did tonight.
Dreadful, dreadful song.
Also, I've just got memories of it being like killed on karaoke a lot.
A hell of a lot.
So, yeah, it was, yeah, not a bad chart. I mean, apart from Anyone Can Fall in Love.
And fucking Sunita.
Oh, you've got a real problem with Sunita, don't you?
I just don't like the fact she'd turn up to the fucking opening of a door, that one. I mean, she's not as though she was that talented in the first place, but fucking hell, she's on everything, like Amanda Holden. Anyway, just outside the top 10 then, before we get litigious. Panic from the Smiths at number 11. Let's Go All the Way from Sly Fox at number 12. I Didn't Mean to Turn You On at 15 from Robert Palmer. Do you remember that?
No, I don't.
That's a good song. Dancing on the Ceiling, Lionel Richie at 18. The Way It Is, Bruce Hornsby in the Range at 28. My Favourite Waste of Time at 32. And Happy Hour at 36.
I like that. So what's that? You're my favourite waste of time.
That's the one. Glory of Love at 38 is a new entry.
Brilliant.
And Venus for Bananarama at number 40. So yeah, there's some good tunes there.
Fantastic.
Not the best one we've done, but not the worst either.
It's not the first one we've done with Anyone Can Fall
in Love.
No,
nor So Macho. Yeah, thanks. I've got to fucking edit that. No, it's not. Dreadful song. Maybe we should put it in as a little bonus. No, it's not a bonus at all, is it?
Nope.
No. Oh, shut up. Anyway, so there we go. Yeah, 1986, top 10.
Nice.
Not bad, not bad at all.
All right, then. So how about we move on to your challenge?
Challenge.
So, folks, if this is your first week joining us, then we'll explain it through. If it's not, then you'll know what it is. So Darren has a challenge every single week in order to link last week's film to this week's film. He starts off with 5 steps and gradually goes down week by week. Mm-hmm. So this week you have 2 steps.
2 steps, yes.
In order to link... Mm-hmm. Romancing the Stone.
Oh, you remembered.
To yeah. This week's film, The Fly.
Yes.
Can it be done?
Let's find out. As we know, Kathleen Turner was one of the stars of Romancing the Stone. And so that is where we start off this week. Step number 1. Kathleen Turner was in Who Framed Roger Rabbit with Christopher Lloyd. And step number 2... Christopher Lloyd was in Buckaroo Banzai with Jeff Goldblum, who was in The Fly. And that was the two-step challenge this week.
Hey. So I really think you stand a chance at getting all the way this time.
Well, it depends on what next week's film is, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. No, you probably don't.
No, because it's fuck all in this cast this week. Yeah, it's a very small cast in this film.
Yeah, but then Goldblum's been around, so you might be okay. Slay. Yeah.
Okay.
So we are. Well done, my friend.
Thank you very much, my friend.
I will drink to that.
Okay, I'll drink to it too. Yeah, so there we go. That's a two-step challenge. As usual, first impressions then.
Yeah, I'm...
challenge, obviously, of The Fly.
Yeah, so, you know me, I'm not a big fan of horror films, but I also don't find this a horror film. Mm. It's weird. I remember being very fond of... I suppose fond's a very weird word, but right. I remember liking this film when it came out. Well, not when it came out, but when I was old enough to watch it.
Right.
Or not old enough.
Yeah.
You know, I probably watched it on video.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think I was fascinated by the gore of it and things. And I didn't know if I was going to like it. And right. I found it on Disney Plus of all places. And I quite did, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. It was you know, it's not an intrusive watch. It's an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Goldblum, I think, is just really good in this.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are some great effects. You know, pacing wise, it's okay. There's some fun moments. There's a couple of draggy moments, but all in all, when I finished, I was like, oh, I'm glad I watched that.
Good.
So, yeah, that's
nice.
What about you?
I loved it.
There we go.
Absolutely loved it. I'd forgotten. I hadn't watched this film, God, geez, in probably 20, 25 years.
Uh-huh.
And I sort of regret not watching it more often. Because I'd forgotten how much I absolutely loved it. It's a weird sort of hybrid of horror, of tragedy, of sci-fi. Mm-hmm. And
body shock as well.
Yeah, body horror.
Body horror.
Cronenberg is a big body horror director, isn't he? But yeah, I absolutely loved it. And I actually found it really, really sad. It wasn't just horrifying. It was really sad and a tragedy, really. And they're all so likable and lovable and just fun. And you know, I think the story is so well written. They hook you in straight away. And yeah, my initial impression is I loved it. Absolutely.
Oh, great.
It.
That's really good.
Yeah.
It's a very well made film.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of the effects are pretty bad now.
They're largely good, though.
On the whole, yeah.
Yeah, they're largely good.
And the gore that I remember, you know, when which was a big selling point when I was a kid, you know, everyone was talking about, oh, God, you know, the puke on the hand.
Yeah.
It all looks a bit tame now.
Does it? It put me off my food last night.
Did it put you off donuts forever?
Probably.
Really?
Honestly, true story. Last night, I was thinking, oh, I'm a bit hungry. So I started the film. I preheated the oven. And by the time it came to going to put my burger on, I was like, actually, I don't want to eat now. So I had to suffice with some vodka and Jaffa cakes.
Nice. So you did eat?
Like some Jaffa cakes later on.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
I didn't puke on them first, though. Oh, that was gross. Oh, that was so gross.
But that's what flies do, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
Well, there we go. That's our initial impressions. Should we crack straight into it?
Let's do it.
Okie dokie. Now, regular listeners will know that at this point in the podcast, Matt has a challenge to give us the synopsis of the film, and he gets as many seconds as the film has minutes. So, yeah. Mr. Matthew, how long was the film?
1 hour 36.
1:36. So you have 1 minute 36 seconds to give us the synopsis. How are you feeling about this?
I think because sometimes I'm like, yeah, I've got this. I don't think I've got this because I was having too much fun, kind of making a little commentary on it myself as I was writing the synopsis.
Okay. Well, let's find out how you do. Let's have the jingle. And if you're still ready,
yep,
go.
Seth Brundle is a brilliant scientist, and as a way of showing off to the beautiful Ron, he invites her back to show her his teleporter. Woohoo! She uses a stocking because, you know, reasons, and is blown away that it works. She now wants to tell his story, but he didn't think a journalist would want to do that. I mean, surely she just came back for a chat, right? The next day, she sees her sleazy boss and ex-lover Stathis, who says it's all smoke and mirrors. Seth turns up and convinces her to document the whole thing as he pushes to have living flesh teleport. They get close and have sexy time, and after said sexy time, he gets inspired and manages to find a way of sending living tissue through the teleporter. As they're celebrating, Ronnie finds out that Stathis is causing trouble and goes to tell him to just fuck off. Seth, meanwhile, is pissed, and while we all do silly stuff while drinking, he puts himself through a teleporter. Unfortunately, there's a fly in there too, and he gets fused with Seth. He tells Ron he's done it, and they have more sexy time. He's changing physically, but also mentally. He wants Ronnie to go through the teleporter, but when she declines, he goes off and finds the most 80s-looking girl he can, and they have sexy time. Ronnie finds out that she's pregnant, and Seth declines further and further into madness, finding out that he's now Brundlefly. She tries to tell him about the kid, but backs away. Stathis takes her to a doctor where Brundlefly kidnaps her and takes her back to the lab where she, him, and the baby can all fuse together. Stathis, in a rescue attempt, loses a hand and a foot, but ultimately saves the day by shooting the machine, causing Seth to be fused with it. Ronnie reluctantly ends the life of Seth as credits roll.
Okay. He loses a hand and foot. It's very careless.
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
just turns up with...
I'm sure I had it with me. It's
Right, so just remind us, how long was the film?
1:36.
Yeah, 1 minute 36 seconds. You did it in, drum roll, 1 minute 26.51 seconds.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, nice. And two lots of sexy time.
No, there was loads. There was loads.
Oh, I only heard two. I wasn't listening.
Sexy time. Yeah, I think there's three or four. Yeah.
Dirty. Pure filth, this film.
Especially with the most 80s looking girl ever.
Yeah.
It's like the impression that we've got of the 80s now was just smashed up onto that screen with her, wasn't it?
But... literally smashed on the screen.
There we are.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is what happens in the film. Have you seen it? Let us know. Do you like it? Let's rip the thing to pieces then, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty fly.
For a white guy. Nice.
No, without talking too much about the performances, I just think it's a very small cast, but that works with it.
Definitely. Cronenberg and his penchant for body horror. I think this is probably the best Cronenberg film that there is, in my opinion. I've seen quite a few of the others, and they range from very, very good to pretty shite.
Mm-hmm.
But this one for me is in a different league.
It's very pacey, isn't it? It gets started very quick. I was surprised how quickly. So, I mean, apart from the long title sequence, which is about 2.5 minutes, I was like, come on.
Jeez.
So we start the party,
it's designed as to look like what scientists think flies can see, apparently.
I stopped looking at the title sequence and started checking my phone. But once we got to the party, though, it goes like a rocket, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So
yeah, yeah.
She's back at his place within the first 3 minutes of the film.
Quick mover, as I say.
Quick mover. I mean, but also, it's just, yeah. I mean, I'm just trying to hold back on talking about Goldblum because I think he's part of what makes this film really special.
I agree. I mean, the cast are something else, but we'll do that in the next chapter as we always do.
As we always do, yeah.
But I have to say, he is spellbinding.
Yeah,
his physicality is amazing. He's such a studied performance.
Now, effects aside, I can't imagine. I mean, yeah, the effects I'm sure cost a lot.
Mm.
I can't imagine this whole production costs an awful lot. When you when you think about the sets, they got that space there. You've got the office of quite a popular magazine for scientists. Yeah, that's got a giant office.
Yeah, yeah. And a hospital.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it's
pretty
Yeah, it's quite limited. But like I say, the small cast and the small number of sets, I think it works all the more for it. I think it makes it feel even more oppressive. And obviously the party as well. But so I think it makes it feel even more impressive than if it was bigger and more lavish.
Mm.
And that really works in its favour.
So we started to, like, you know, he gets her back to his place to show this teleporters, right? Way. The first thing she takes off is a stocking. So, I mean, so I'm guessing
it's such a saucy little way.
Well, that's it. So I was thinking, has she got chemistry with him from the beginning?
Yeah, I guess
Because the romance for me, I mean, not to jump out. Well, fuck it, let's jump about. Why not? But the romance for me felt a little bit forced, if I'm honest.
Right.
Because
then, I guess she's a journalist, isn't she?
She was there to get a story. But then one night, he's laying on the bed. She gets a bit frisky.
Yeah. She's got needs, mate. She's got needs.
She's got needs. But, you know, did she have that attraction with him from the beginning? Or
Maybe. I mean, he's quite an impressive guy. He's
got that charming quality, I suppose, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's a sort of nerd.
he's the guy that doesn't see what's right in front of him in real life.
Exactly.
He just sees the computers.
Yeah. He's awkward. He's obviously amazingly talented and very, very brainy. it's insecure as well. Maybe that attracts. Maybe that's why.
Okay.
And she, I think, is. She's obviously. I don't know if she's on the rebound, but she's looking for somebody who's not.
Oh,
Stathis.
What a dick.
What a horrible character. A vile piece of shit. But bizarrely, almost becomes the hero.
Well, yeah.
Fucking weird. It's a strange, strange film. And so different from its source material, the 1958. Well, actually, it was a short story in Playboy magazine, wasn't it, in 57?
Was it?
Yeah. And then it was adapted.
I've never read it. I mean, I just, well.
Look at pictures, yeah.
Yeah, I only buy it for the pictures.
Nice.
Hang on. No.
What? Yeah, so anyway, it was a short story in Playboy in 57. Then it was adapted into a film with Vincent Price in 58.
Because didn't Goldblum write to Price and say, I hope you enjoy my version as much as you enjoyed as much as I enjoyed yours?
And he went to see it, didn't he? Vincent Price went to see it and said,
I liked most of it, and then it got a little bit horrible for me.
It was a bit too much or something. Which is nice. But yeah, I mean, coming from that sort of source, rewritten by Charles Edward Pogue, who came up with the idea, and Mel Brooks was one of the backers as a producer.
Well, yeah, and apparently he didn't want to be sort of known. Right?
Yeah.
I read that, then I watched it.
Yeah.
And it says a fucking Brooks film thing, one of the first things you see. I'm like, well, that's okay. Yeah.
And apparently it was
incognito
at the premiere handing out Dealey Boppers for everyone.
Yes.
But there you go. But anyway, yeah, Charles Edward Pogue wrote this version of the script, or a version of the script, and the backers and the producers and stuff wanted Cronenberg to direct it, but he wasn't available. He was doing Total Recall at the time, wasn't he?
And then he was off Total Recall.
And, then someone else, Brierson, something like that, was brought in.
Yeah, then he had a tragedy and got...
His daughter was killed, wasn't he? In a car accident in South Africa. So he backed out the project.
But also, wasn't this meant to be a vehicle for Tim Burton as well at one
point?
Was
it really?
Yeah.
Right.
So Tim Burton was originally meant to direct. I think there's a lot of directors banded about.
Yeah.
But do you know what? Ultimately, I think it's probably the best film. I can't say that, but having Cronenberg direct it is probably the best thing to happen.
Yeah. Did you watch the documentary? It's on YouTube.
No, I didn't.
I watched bits of it. And apparently, as I say, they wanted Cronenberg first and then it sort of went around the houses a bit. And then Total Recall was cancelled, or at that point was cancelled, shelved. So Cronenberg was available again and they contacted him and said, you know, will you do it? He was like, yes. Or his agent was like, yes. He wants a fee of $750,000.
Oh, yeah.
They went to the backers and went, Cronenberg wants $1 million. Okay, if that's what you want, you think he's the best man for the project, give it to him. And they went back and said, so Cronenberg's asking for $750,000, we'll pay him $1 million to do it. Okay, where's the contract?
Great.
I mean, to me, that makes no business sense whatsoever, but another $250,000 in the bank, cha-ching.
Well, it makes a bit of business sense, you know, if somebody's happy at their job, you know.
Yeah.
I'd be very happy at my job. If someone told me, here's $1 million for doing something, I'd be like, I'd whatever you like, pal, apart from eating puked on donuts.
but looking into Cronenberg, he seems like a really nice guy, very loyal guy to his crew and stuff. He apparently always wants to shoot in Canada and Ontario, where they shot this. Always uses exactly the same crew. Just
it's
very,
nice,
very loyal,
though, isn't it?
Yeah. And you know, it obviously pays dividends.
I will say, I think, looking at it, what, 25 years? No, 30, sorry, 35 years later.
Fucking hell, yeah. 35 years later, yeah.
35 years later, I was so surprised at how well the effects hold up.
Yeah, on the whole.
For the most part. And also, I got slight Back to the Future vibes when they were doing the experiment and she's filming. And you got the, person filming next and you got the mad scientist and then you hear the, I was like, oh, yeah.
I have to say that for me, one of the first things I wrote down was the sound design is superb.
Mm.
It's so well thought out. Even the sound of the telepods, or even when she reaches in to get a stocking out, the sound is it's so well. It's really well done. I was so impressed by it.
So what's I guess good moments for
the
you?
The thing is, I've got so many notes written down. I could just cock on and on and on. That's the problem. That first time he puts the baboon through the telepods.
Oh,
it's horrible.
It's terrible.
It's heartbreakingly horrible.
That's what started putting me off my food.
Right.
Right.
Forget the fact the poor thing's just been fucking turned inside out. It put you off your food.
Well, it did, because it wasn't real.
Good. I was too busy thinking, fucking hell, he's brave cuddling one of those bastards.
Yeah, they're meant to be really wild.
A hairy shark. But, it is pretty gross, isn't it?
Yeah, but you know what? I didn't at any one time think they'd gone too far. I thought they just you know, I think they did it just about right. In my opinion, yeah. They did it just about right because
absolutely to get the point across, you have to do something like that. I remember in the second film where they do it to a dog, that really upset me.
I can't remember the second film.
Right,
really.
I can't remember who's in it. It's something like someone like Jason Bateman, but it's not Jason Bateman. I can't remember.
If there was only a way we could find out. Yeah.
One of the stand-up moments for me was that bit with that first teleportation of the baboon. And then just the sort of the bloodied arm hitting the wall and sliding, or the glass and sliding down. Yeah, that really affected me.
Eric Stoltz, by the way.
Oh, Eric Stoltz. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, played Brundle's son. Son of Brundle. I think John Getz is back for it as well.
Oh yeah, I think he's the only member that came back. Yeah.
Right. Yes, another stand-up moment for you?
It's difficult to talk about stand-up moments without getting too much into the characterization of Jeff Goldblum because actually, I think given a lesser actor, it would be not as good a film. I guess the end stuff as well with all the transformation. I was kind of like, oh, this is good.
Yeah,
where actually he started to break apart and become a fly. It didn't look too hokey, and I was worried it was going to look really really hokey because clearly they're going to start using a puppet.
Yep.
And it didn't take me out of the film. There was still jeopardy there, even when you've got this fly fused with a machine.
Mm-hmm.
There's still jeopardy, and I felt a bit of empathy when she's got the shotgun and the fly is sort of, you know,
it's still a shred of humanity.
Shred of him in there,
yeah.
And then, oh yeah, that moment as well when he turns around and says like, "Go before I hurt you."
Yeah, I mean, some of it is just like I say, it's a tragedy. It's just. It's brilliant. I think it's so well written. And as I was saying earlier, Charles Edward Pogue wrote a version of the script that was then sold to Cronenberg to bring him on board. And he rewrote the script again, didn't he? But he insisted that they both get joint credit, co-credit. Which is good. But I mean, there's so many influences on the script, I think, isn't there? Well, even the style of the film. I mean, there's Jekyll and Hyde, obviously, a scientist experimenting on himself, yada, 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 it goes wrong.
Yeah, he fucked up on that, didn't he?
He really did, yeah.
I mean, if you're going to transport yourself for the first time, make sure you're not cunted when you do it.
Well, we've all done stupid things when we're drunk.
Yeah, completely. I said that in the summer. We've all been a bit silly when we're drunk.
Yeah.
But never have I teleported myself.
No, that's true, yeah.
Well, I may have done. Sometimes I don't remember getting out of a club and getting in a taxi and getting home. So maybe I teleported.
Maybe you did. Maybe tomorrow you'll be telling another story in the same.
Well, this is it. I mean, and I do look a bit rough like he does later on in the film sometimes after I've been drinking.
We've all been there. And sometimes our skin's falling off as well. But that's for different reasons.
Puking on donuts. Shit, it's a true story. The fly's a true story.
Oh, brilliant. So, yeah, Jekyll and Hyde's an influence. Phantom of the Opera, I think, is an influence as well. One of the shots when he overhears them saying that she's pregnant and she wants it out of her body.
Oh, that's very like Hunchback.
Yeah, exactly what I've got. And obviously, I suppose, one of the biggest is the Metamorphosis by Franz Kafka. I suppose one of the things as well at the time was the whole AIDS allegory.
That it wasn't his intention, but actually people take that message, then
right.
Yeah, you know, he said that wasn't his intention going into it.
Right.
But actually if people take that from it, then yeah, cool.
Yeah.
You know, not cool, but you know,
yeah,
what I mean?
Of course. Yeah.
If you take that message, then yeah. Not message, but it was... Yeah, people.
If that's what you take out of the film.
Yeah, people had compared it
to
like, is it like, you know, like a social commentary on the AIDS pandemic? And he was like, actually, that wasn't what I intended. Mm. But
it could be AIDS, could be cancer, anything of that sort. I mean, I think he does.
Watching a loved one die, essentially.
Yeah, exactly, and changing. Yeah. So it's so multi-layered. This, and I have to say, just as another little thing that I was really impressed with this time. And I've seen it's done so many times before. The revolving set, the use of the revolving set,
yeah.
And the camera fixed to the set.
Yeah, so I was wondering about that. I was wondering if it was like a Nightmare on Elm Street thing where he was.
It's literally just a massive set built that will move around, but the camera is anchored to one point.
It just looked so good, didn't it?
I've seen it done in musicals, we've seen it in Poltergeist, and like say Nightmare on Elm Street. In this, I think it's the best I've ever seen it done.
I mean, here's the thing. I mean, I'm going to just say something which just popped in my head as I was watching this last night, right? You know me, I'm a big fan of superhero films. If this had been Marvel or something like that, he'd have got all the benefits of being a fly.
Yeah, he would have flown.
Yeah, but also, he wouldn't have changed. He still looked good. He'd probably put on a superhero suit and gone and fought crime.
Or just had like funny eyes.
But imagine, poor Spider-Man, poor fucker, gets bitten by a spider, radioactive spider, starts cleaning the walls and stuff. A couple of weeks later, starts developing more legs and stuff. You know?
Well, have you seen the original version of this?
No, I haven't.
Well, I said the original.
But he does turn into a giant fly, doesn't
he? Yeah, but it's, apart from his head, that ends up on the size, its head shrinks, ends up on a fly, and ends up stuck in a cobweb with a giant spider.
So he gets smaller?
His head gets smaller, but his head changes to a fly's head. So a fly's head gets bigger,
okay.
But he's still got a human body.
And then...
But the fly ends up with a human head.
Oh.
It's one of those campy 50s...
I'm tempted to watch it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, a more prepared person would have done that. But
well, yeah, so fucking worry about your burgers and your donuts.
Hey. Loving my burgers. But
I guess then that's pretty much discussed the film, I suppose. There's going to be other things that we drop in as we go.
Yeah, probably.
And we've got the cast to talk about, which I think is one of the biggest.
That's the difficult thing. I'm trying not to talk about the cast.
Yeah.
Because, and especially, you know, Goldblum himself. So he.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll do that next then.
All right, then.
Let's have a little break, shall we? This month's special Patreon episode is available now.
Top five songs of
1986. They're in spandex. They're big fucking guitar. Oh, superb. It's the final countdown. Living in America, James Brown.
Which sort of, you were singing that when we were coming to America.
Living in America.
My number five is this.
Ooh.
What do you think, man? Yes, Cutting Crew and I Just Died in Your Arms Tonight.
Thank God for that, because on my list I was really flogging myself for not putting that in the list.
It's a good song, though, isn't it?
That Burning Heart.
Again, from a Rocky film.
Yes, exactly. And what a tune. Another Manic Monday.
Not from a Rocky film.
Not from a Rocky film. But yeah,
imagine he loses. Just another Manic Monday.
Whoa. Written by Prince.
John Farnham, You're the Voice.
Thank God for that. I can cross that one off my list as well for not printing it.
Oh,
I think she's phenomenal. I love her voice. I love her style. I love her attitude. It's Alison Moyet and Is This Love? Is this love? I love it. Fucking love it. He's a very good slap bass player. Ringing any bells?
No.
Mark King?
No.
Okay, my number three tune is Lessons in Love from Level 42.
Okay. Yeah. If you've enjoyed it, well, I don't care if you've enjoyed this or not.
All 80s Adventure Patreon special episodes are available via subscription from the website patreon.com/80sadventure or check out 80sadventure.co.uk for further details.
And we're back!
Yep,
part two of Darren and Matt's 80s Adventure where we are looking at The Fly.
The Fly.
And in this section, we are going to be looking at the cast. And for this film, it's quite important, I think, mm-hmm. really, to be chatting about them.
Yeah, because absolutely.
I don't know about you, but given different actors, this film would be just very, very different. I mean, yeah. I know that sounds easy to say and it's very obvious, but would you like to hear some alternate casting?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
All right then, Darren. So apparently Michael Keaton was offered the role of Seth.
Right.
Now, I can see him doing it because Keaton is a very, very competent performer, very talented.
Yeah, it would have been a very, very different film, I think.
He could have got that weird side and that crazy side. And yeah, I can see that. Mel Gibson was considered.
No.
Turn it down for Lethal Weapon. John Lithgow apparently auditioned for the lead role.
Right.
James Woods turned it down.
Seriously?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is all according to my extensive research, right.
But no, I can sort of see James Woods being, mm-hmm. He does have that sort of weird look to him.
Is yeah.
Whether I'd buy the opposite side, the nicer side. I don't know.
Well, here's a couple of others. Richard Dreyfuss.
No.
I personally can't see that.
No. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Richard Dreyfuss, but no, I can't see it.
Travolta was considered, but I mean, he wasn't that bankable then.
I can't see that.
Here's the final one, which I think would have been pretty cool, was Willem Dafoe.
Yeah, he definitely has the intensity.
He's definitely got that.
Yeah. Okay.
And women considered for Ronnie, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Laura Dern.
Laura Dern, maybe, yeah.
Apparently the first choice from Cronenberg, though, was Linda Hamilton.
Okay.
So he saw her in the Terminator and I was like, yeah, she turned it down because she was disturbed about the whole parts in the script, but mainly the giving birth to a maggot.
Right. Well, I don't think she actually had to, did she?
No. I mean, no, that wasn't... By the way, you actually have to give birth, but yeah. So, yeah, I guess out of all that, I mean, I think I'd like to see Hamilton and probably, for me, Keaton.
Yeah. I can't really see anyone other than Jeff Goldblum being Seth.
Well, with saying that then, let's chat about him.
Yeah, I mean, I think everything I've ever seen Jeff Goldblum do outside of acting, so like things on Graham Norton and stuff like that, and just the other interviews, he does have that sort of almost otherworldliness. He's a bit weird. He's a bit out there. He's a bit kooky.
Is it Apple TV? He's got his TV show on or something? Or
I don't know, is it?
Or is it Disney Plus or something? There's a Jeff Goldblum show.
Right.
Where he, I don't know, he goes to look at stuff like ice cream or
of course.
And then he goes into the world of sneakers and things like that. So he just goes and has a look at other stuff and just does his Goldblumisms.
I can well believe, and I know he's a very talented musician as well, isn't he? He has a...
Well, so I'm assuming that was him playing
Yeah, I've seen him play stuff before and he's got a band. He's toured as well. So he's a very, very talented guy. But he's fucking... weird, if you like. He is,
but the right sort of weird.
Absolutely. He's got that right sort of level of kookiness, but it's also vulnerable and intense.
Are we talking about just him as an actor or role?
I think in general.
I would like to wonder how much of the performance and the script he was adapting and kind of going with.
Well, there's that bit in the coffee shop, isn't it?
Yes.
And he has that, when he's doing the sugar into his coffee, about half of that is what he came up with the night before, wasn't it? Before shooting that scene.
You can believe that. And the funny thing, I think in the hands of a lesser performer or a different performer, you'd have hated Seth.
That's the thing. And when we talked earlier in the car about the deleted scene, that for anyone that's not seen it, there's a deleted scene where when he comes up with the idea, or the computer comes up with the idea of splicing him together with a pure human, would help pull back the effects of the fly. So he tries it with the remaining baboon and a cat, and splices the baboon and cat together. And it just goes hideously wrong. It's basically this weird, fucked up creature that sort of runs around. And then he beats it to death with a...
what would you call it?
A bat.
A bat.
as I say, he beats it to death. And it looks really bad in terms of the effect. I don't think it works at all.
Do you think... they cut it because of that or because...
But also, I think you lose sympathy for Brundle.
Right.
Whereas you're on his side up to a point. When I watched it, it was like, oh my God, that just makes you look like a complete twat, a horrible, horrible bastard, a selfish piece of shit. So it changes how you feel towards the character, I think, and I'm glad they cut it out. Apparently it was in like the first screenings, and they lost the audience for the rest of the... from that point on in the film. But also, like I say, it looks really, really...
Isn't it funny that how one little scene can change like the whole meaning of it?
Yeah, but also, I mean, we can have a look later. It's on YouTube. It's very easy to find. But it just looks pretty naff as well. And fair play to Chris Wallace, the effects. He won an Oscar for Best Makeup. Deservedly so. But that, I think, maybe would have ruined it for him, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
It's not successful, let's put it that way.
Just finishing up, though, he was phenomenal in this role.
His physicality when he's changing into the fly, although the little ticks and the obviously you can't
see. I love the fact that he's walking sticks as well, that almost simulated the extension of his limbs.
Yeah, it's such a clever performance, you must have if you're Cronenberg on set and you see him doing all this stuff, you must think, fuck me.
Yeah, we're on to a winner, yeah?
Made the right choice here. Jeez. Yeah, very, very good performance. And why he didn't win an Oscar, I don't know.
No, neither way. I wasn't there. I mean, yeah. I just, in my head, I started thinking, I was going, yeah, why didn't he win? But yeah.
Because that is one hell of a performance.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I mean, that's his Elephant Man, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it really is. Whatever. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Oh, my God, I was grossed out by it, though, Daz. Let's be quite frank. You know, when his teeth are falling out, he's puking on food, his thing. I mean...
He's got his penis in the cupboard and
a jar. You text me saying you're never eating... never biting your nails again. That was...
Yeah. But I like the bit is what the arm wrestling as well.
Mate, the arm wrestle. Well, that's a straight back to Over the Top, isn't it? A few weeks ago.
He had another film with arm wrestling.
Imagine if he'd have walked into a bar and it was Stallone and his cronies there arm wrestling.
$100. Yeah, nice. But no, I'm not taking anything away from Jeff Goldblum. He is superb.
Yeah, fantastic.
Even though he wasn't wanted by the studio, apparently the head of the studio went, well, you know, I'm not accepting this. I don't think it's a good idea. But if that's who you really want, then we'll go with it. And what
a
choice.
It would be a different film without it.
Agreed.
Gina Davis then as Ronnie.
Yeah, at the time, almost Mrs. Goldblum.
Yeah. So they married, what, the year later or something?
Did they actually get married, didn't they?
I think they did, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, because they got together on a film like before this.
Yeah, yeah.
And he recommended her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think she did a good job, to be honest.
I mean, she did a great job.
I've always liked Gina Davis.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to take away, you know, from her performance by the fact that she got recommended.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by
I didn't find that out until doing the research last night.
Oh, really? Yeah. So you watched the film Cold without knowing that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
I've never known that.
And do you know what? Given their due, they played it really well at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where they're meant to be strangers.
Yeah, absolutely. I think she's superb, and it could very easily have just been because I mean, she spent most of the fucking film crying her eyes out.
Yeah.
The second half of the film. And that could have been very, very annoying, but she's so justified in the way she acts.
Yeah.
And you really feel the pain and the hurt.
I do think she fell in love too quickly, but then it was an hour and a half film.
Exactly, yeah.
Also, I was a bit concerned when within 3 minutes she said, yeah, all right, I'll come back. And, you know, it's the 80s, and she's going back to this, I mean, quite a creepy warehouse, to be fair, isn't it? Honestly, even as a gentleman, if a lady said, would you like to come back to mine? And I got driven down this really abandoned sort of back alley, I'd be like, are you about to do something to me? Because it looked so dodgy, didn't it? But, you know, she played that feisty reporter, that Lois Lane type.
Yep.
And went in and took off her stocking. And then next, you know, the rest is history.
More innocent times, I suppose, Matt.
Again, well, I don't know. For me, the 80s, you know, I mean, where is this set, Darren? Where is this actually meant to be set?
Well, I think it's left. I mean, it's obviously Ontario.
It's a city.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Whether it's supposed to be set. It just says him and all the other scientists from North America, doesn't he?
Yeah. So I think it's meant to be set in America. It was filmed in Canada.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think she's fantastic. I think she's... Although her surname's a bit too much like Queef for my liking, but
Queef, yeah.
But she has that great vulnerable side to her, and she's I'm gushing about this film, and I can feel myself doing it.
Yeah,
I'm trying to justify why, but I just think this
tragic,
But also, but you know, it's not normally what I do. Just because I like a film, I have to still tear it to pieces. But I just think there's something about this film that is so special. It's their relationship. It's so, you love them. You root for them. It's not just a horror film. It's not just a body horror film. It's not just a horrible film. It's quite funny in places as well. Their relationship is nice. You root for them. You love them.
And well, they're the reason this works, right?
Exactly. And when it all goes tits up, you know, for me, it just really struck an emotional chord, which is bizarre in this type of film. It's unique.
I think that's key to a lot of films, though, throughout history. If you get the relationship working,
yeah.
Then
but in this genre of film,
yeah.
I think, like I say, I think it's a unique feeling to have.
Well, and she was brilliant.
Yeah,
she was really
absolutely
good.
Absolutely brilliant.
And yeah, I've always had a soft spot for Gina Davis. I mean, she's a cracking performer.
Yeah,
still is. Still a really good performer. I've watched her in Glow recently, actually.
Right, is that still going?
No, unfortunately, it got cancelled. But no, they were going to come back for a fourth season, but COVID, and then they pulled it. Hopefully, there'll be a film to finish it off.
Yeah.
Right, John Getz then as Stathis.
Vile.
Well, I mean, okay, can I just say, as as a writer, so, okay, you've got Seth Brundle, that's cool, mm-hmm. right? Veronica Quaife. Stathis Borans.
Yeah. I mean, where's he got these names from?
I mean, it's just like kind of going,
I'm sorry to any Stathis or Mr. Borans out there. Yeah.
And also, they got Tawny.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, she's never mentioned by name, is she?
But he does.
Marky
calls her Tawny.
If I'm going to take her home for the night if I win. And she goes with him.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck are you doing?
He won the bet. Of course she does.
Yeah, so Stathis, I mean, we've encountered this character so much.
But not to this extent. He's really pushed to almost to the nth degree. He's fucking vile.
Yeah, but also in the same way as, I think, was it John Hurt in Big?
John Hurt in Big?
Not John Hurt. right, there we go. John...
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, he doesn't say, if all this goes tits up or whatever, can I claim your body?
Whole sort of like, well, maybe we can still fuck, you know, and stuff like that. You know, it's...
But I think he just pushes it. This character goes way too far. He's vile. He's crude. He's crass.
But then he becomes our hero.
Bizarrely, ends up becoming the hero, like you say. And it's a very bizarre...
John Hurd. There we go.
John Hurd.
Hurd. Yeah. I know it's like, yeah. So I got Hurt and Hurd confused. Yeah, so he is your 80s, I guess, yuppie.
Scummy yuppie, yeah.
Yuppie who gets a bit of a redemption arc.
Yeah.
He pays
a bit of a price.
Pays a hell of a price.
Mm. I guess you could say it's a little bit of karma.
Oh, it was horrible, though, Dan. Like, watching the foot. Apparently, there's another deleted scene where he eats the foot that he is ripped off.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my word. Nice. Yeah.
It didn't need that.
No, not at all. And I like the fist, the melting of the fist. I guess, I don't know, I guess they did it in the same way they do the guy in...
Are you going to say Indiana Jones?
Indiana Jones. So it's but just hair dryers melting like a wax skin over the whatever and just stuff going out.
Yeah, apparently Cronenberg wasn't happy with that.
Well, you can see it sort of moving around and obviously they film it either, they overcrank the camera or they speed up in post.
But he was happy once it was sped up.
Right.
So, but also, you're getting acid on your hand. Yeah. It's going to be shaking, isn't it?
Of course, yeah. Well, I'm also not just going to stand there and let him fucking do it.
No, I'd have my middle finger up.
Not for long.
It'd be like at the end of Terminator, like instead of the thumb going up, you just get a finger.
Fuck you, Eddie.
I mean, I think he played him well. That's the thing. We were meant to dislike the character. Yes. Then we're meant to... I don't know if we're meant to like him or kind of thank fuck he was there, I suppose.
Yeah. I guess, yeah. Like you say, thank fuck he was there. And also, thank fuck she's there.
He's about
to puke on his neck.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
He does have a misguided... Like, he's got an obsession with Gina Davis, with Ronnie.
Yep.
You know, the fact that he's down on his knees in a clothing store, you know, and lets himself into her apartment. Yeah, so he's got that psycho side, but... I guess thank God he did because he then turned up with a shotgun to try and help her at the end.
Yeah, I just find him so crass and crude and horrible.
Completely.
The whole thing about I'm onto something huge here. What, his cock?
I must say I did laugh out loud at that line.
Of course you did. Of course you did.
Oh yeah, telling me you didn't.
Oh no, because as a character, I just found him absolutely disgusting.
All right then. We haven't got many other characters to talk about.
That's it, isn't it? They're such a small cast.
There's Tawny, though, who's the most 80s. Like honestly, I still can't believe how 80s she looks.
I know. It down to that sort of white-flecked denim jacket. Such an 80s look.
She literally is the picture. You open a catalogue of the 80s. That's what... I mean, the hair, the denim jacket, the tights.
Yeah.
And the fact that they'd had sex and she's there with her pants and her denim jacket on. Oh, for God's sake.
Yeah.
She leaves the place. She does the walk of shame in her denim jacket
and
her pants.
Pantaloons. Nice.
So, yeah. And when we say pants, we don't mean... Trousers. Yeah, we mean pants.
Fucking knickers, isn't it?
But yeah, and then I suppose Cronenberg himself.
Yeah, makes an appearance as the old gynecologist.
As a gyno.
Yeah, apparently crops up in quite a few of his films.
I think, didn't Gina Davis ask him to do this or something?
Did she?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, so it's a relatively small cast, but yes. I mean, what? Goldblum.
Yeah,
hats off to you, Goldblum.
Like I say, it's all down to Goldblum for me. And how the guy wasn't even nominated for an Oscar, I have no idea.
I want to watch more Goldblum films, you know?
I do like him. I do like him. Very talented,
I mean, like Jurassic Park. Again, though, that was an interesting connection. I was doing my whole research and stuff. The fact that his character doesn't like to change his clothes like an Einstein trick.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Same in Jurassic Park.
Is it? I've not seen it for ages. I can't remember. That's, yeah, nice, nice.
I love him. I love Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, I think he's absolutely superb.
Well, should we take a wee break and then...
come back for...
music and quiz.
Okay, then.
Music and quiz. What's going on? Are you all right, Daz?
I'm so cold.
Why are you so cold?
I've lost my favourite Def Leppard t-shirt. Oh, if only I knew somewhere else to buy another t-shirt.
Do you know what, Darren? It's funny you should say that because we now have 80s Adventure t-shirts.
What?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All you've got to do is head over to 80sadventure.com, click shop and see what we have on offer. It's a way of supporting the show and there's also some fun designs with a lovely 80s feel.
80s Adventure t-shirts. Oh, I'm going to go to the shop right now. Bye.
Darren, it's an online shop.
And we're back.
Yep. Part three of Darren and Matt's 80s Adventure. Before we fall over, let's start talking about the music. And then we go into quiz, don't we? Go into quiz.
Yes, we do. Ooh. Yes, we do.
So, yeah, the music.
Yeah. Mr. Howard Shaw. And before, I mean, I was sort of half watching the opening credits and half making notes and stuff as I went along. And the minute it kicked in, I knew it was Howard Shaw.
Did you?
Yeah, I knew. Because I'm a massive, massive fan of Silence of the Lambs.
Okay.
And this score is very, very similar. The opening passage is very similar. The level of drama within the music is very similar as well. And it's really, it's almost operatic, now you see, which is a bizarre thing to say.
I read something today, and I'm going to probably misquote it or misunderstand it. There was something about when Goldblum's walking down the street and there's this big orchestral number or something.
Yeah.
And people are like, why? The guy's just walking down the street. And I think it was Mel Brooks turned around and said, no, he's walking to his destiny or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I'm probably misquoting. I've had a few drinks.
Aren't we all?
I think there was something, though, in the back of my mind. And now, correct me if I'm wrong, but that it was this film, the score in this film, that made Peter Jackson want to use him for Lord of the Rings. Is that right?
Yeah, well, he definitely used him in Lord of the Rings. Yeah, yeah, as we know. But it wouldn't surprise me. But like I said, the score for this one and for Silence of the Lambs, it's so similar. It hurts. It's the same.
It hoits.
It's the same use of same sort of instrumentation for the big dramatic moments. And instantly, it's the minute you can tell a John Williams score.
Mm-hmm.
These two, I could just tell straight away. And I think the score is so over the top, so almost melodramatic.
Haven't we had another Howard Shaw?
He did Big.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which is a much lighter.
I was like, I know.
Almost jazzy score, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Big. But so he shows off his stylies very well. But this is, as I say, it's almost operatic in the fact it's so over the top. It matches the action perfectly.
Awesome.
And I really, really like it. So I am now on the lookout for this score on record.
Oh, of course. Right, okay.
But yeah, I mean, he's worked with Cronenberg a lot. He did Scanners and Videodrome and all that sort of stuff. As you say, he did the Lord of the Rings films. He did Philadelphia and Mrs. Doubtfire, Ed Wood.
Ed Wood, is a brilliant film. Have you seen that? Black and white film, Johnny Depp, Tim Burton.
It's the director, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, Plan 9 from Outer Space and all that sort of stuff. Really good.
Not for many, many, many years.
But, really good film.
And Crash as well, which I just... Oh, Panic Room. Fucking hell, I didn't realise it was Panic Room.
Oh, Jodie Foster.
Yeah, have you seen that?
Yes.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
Me and Cez watched that on like a hangover day.
I want to say it's really like 2006.
Yeah, came out in 2002.
Oh, right. Wow, okay.
Yeah. I just remember being horrified a bit when they're in the Panic Room and the ex-husband or whatever gets the shit kicked out of him. Anyway, spoilers. also did Gangs of New York, The Aviator. So he's done a lot of big films.
A bit of Scorsese as well. Okay.
Yeah, and I just think the score, everything about this film has come together to work.
I'm not criticising. I think he's very good. I could not For the life of me, though, if someone said to me, "Here's £1 million, mm-hmm. if you can hum a Howard Shaw score,"
fair enough.
I couldn't do it. Could you?
I think I could probably hum "Silence of the Lambs."
Go on then.
Don't put me on the spot. Well, okay, just like do 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 like that. There you go.
All right, okay, brilliant. Yeah, here we go. Here's £1 million, Daz.
Thanks very much. I'm pissed.
Yeah, jeez. I know, but that's the thing. So if I say to you, "Hum a John Williams," you don't even have to think about it. But that, I can't. But also, yeah, maybe that's because I've got Jurassic Park in my head because we've been talking about Goldblum so much.
Just
got on them. But yeah, the score worked well, and I didn't notice it as well,
right?
Which was good. It wasn't jarring for me, and it obviously enhanced what was going on.
Yeah. So it emotionally and horrifically.
And so there was a song written for it as well.
Yes.
And
yes,
they didn't use it at the end. It was supposed to be, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's Brian Ferry.
Yep.
Brian Ferry and Nile Rodgers again, who we talked about a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Apparently so. Yeah.
Yep. Was written as lots of songs were, as you say, of the end credits. And Cronenberg hated it, or not hated it, but just thought it was completely inappropriate. It wasn't right. And I think he's absolutely right. The way the film is left, you know, there's no epilogue.
Yeah.
What you see at the end is it. And I think going into a big song or just a song would have been wrong. It would have almost cheapened it.
Mm.
But they do use it in the bar where he picks up Tawny and breaks or gives Marky a compound fracture.
Tawny and Marky.
I mean, Brian Ferry is one of our greatest singers from the 70s and 80s. But I just think for this film, it's inappropriate, and I agree.
Yeah, they should have used John Parr.
Can you imagine a John Parr song playing out after that ending?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think any song would have been wrong.
The fly's coming to get us.
Oh, the fly!
The fly!
Yeah, I'm glad they didn't.
Well, if we ever chat to John Parr, I'd like to say, right, if you would...
When we chat to John Parr.
Would you love to... Right, if you had to do a song for the film The Fly, how would it go, roughly?
Wowzers.
Anyway, is that it for the music?
I think so, yeah. It's a horrible phrase that I don't like using, but it is what it is. It works. It's a score, yeah.
Because we've come across many film scores that haven't worked because they're just jarring, but this does work.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just enhances what's on the screen. And,
okay.
That's what it's supposed to do, I suppose.
Grand. Are you ready to hit the quiz then?
Let's do it. Eyes down for a full house. Now, as long-term listeners will know at this point in the podcast, we have a little quiz for each other.
Yeah,
we do. Quiz. Testing how well we know this film. Usually it's just a fucking stitch up, but it's a good giggle.
Well, essentially we try and make it as right. We started off quite easy, I think, listening back to some of the opening episodes, but now we just make it as impossible as we can.
Yes,
so
you do.
Sorry,
yes,
if you can't.
Who's you can't? What?
Sorry if you can't get some of the answers, but we just try and screw each other over.
Yeah, we do. As it stands, we are at episode 45 now in this group of 10.
Oh, he's getting serious. The glasses are going on.
The bins are going on. In this group of 10, it's two each, if I remember right.
Each.
So, episode 45.
I'm hopeful I get to win one block of 10. Maybe next year.
Maybe try harder.
Apart from quitting my job and working full time on the quiz.
Ah, jeez. You've had a fucking year off work, pretty much.
Yeah, I know, right?
Being an odd-numbered episode, you get to ask first.
Yeah.
So, away you go.
All right, Darren, question number one for you.
Mm-hmm.
The proof of the cover story that was sent to, well, put in under Seth's door.
Yeah.
What month would it go out in?
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Got one in 12 chance, mate.
I didn't look at that at all. May.
December.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was the Christmas issue. I was clocking little details like, because actually, also on the details with that, with the picture of Seth on that cover, did you notice he was wearing a brown leather jacket, which... he watched him buy.
Yeah.
I was like, ooh, nice. it's all...
Ooh, it all ties in together.
All ties in together.
Okay, so that's one to you then. Question number one for you.
Mm-hmm.
How far apart are the telepods?
Really?
Yeah.
Is it ever said?
Yes.
Wow. I'm going to go with 12 feet.
Oh, so close. It's 15 feet.
Oh, wow.
If you remember when they go out for cheeseburgers,
Cheeseburgers.
He says about writing the book. I'm going to paraphrase now because I haven't got the right line written down. He says, the last line of the book will be how I teleported 15 feet
okay,
across.
Okay, nice. Well done.
Yeah, there you go. So that's one each.
One each. Okay. How long has Brundle been working on the project?
6 years.
Yes.
Woo-hoo!
Fuck you, I shouldn't use that one.
Straight in there. Right, nice. Question number two for you. Brundle was the leader of a physics team that almost won a Nobel Prize.
Mm-hmm.
What team?
No idea.
It was the F32 team.
Nope, wouldn't have had a clue on that one. All right then, I'm going to have to go play a bit of hardball then. The first time they had sex.
Yeah.
Yeah, what time did they finish having sex?
Fuck it, I don't know. 10 past midnight.
10:23. A clock has come back to bite you on the ass.
Bite me on the ass. Right, so that's 3-2 then.
But also, I think they started having sexy time about 9:18. So, I mean, really?
That's pretty good going.
Yeah, I mean, that's before he got transformed as well. Yeah. So Brundle presumably hasn't had sexy time in a while, but he's going for well over an hour.
Yeah, fair play.
Show off.
Jesus, I'm going to get over and done with now, to be honest. Right, 3-2. This could be the final question, I guess. Question number three for you. What was he going to order from the Chinese takeaway?
Eggplant and champagne. He does say that. What about eggplant and champagne?
Yeah. What sort of eggplant?
Spicy eggplant.
So, yes. Okay.
Yay! That's it.
Yay! Three each.
That wasn't even one of my questions.
Means we're tied.
Well, because I thought about the eggplant emoji, which obviously didn't exist back then. I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, I wanted to ask this. Okay. As they are celebrating the first teleportation, yeah, which I guess is 15 feet, what is the name of the composer, which is partially obscured with the white cover on the piano?
Right. So I clocked there were three composers.
Mm-hmm.
Which one's it going to be? J.S. Bach was down on the side. You had Beethoven and Rachmaninoff. I'm going to go for Beethoven.
Rachmaninoff.
Oh, you bastard.
You know, I was like, he's going to get this. And fair play to you if you got it. I knew you'd be clocking the music. and I had to say partially, because it was. You could see it was Rachmaninoff, but it was partially obscured. Yeah. Okay. And it was, the white cover.
Okay. Oh, 4-3 to you then. Right. Okie dokie. What was the name of the doctor that she was taken to see?
It was...
Are you looking at your screen, you cheating bastard?
No, I don't know. I don't know, I'm afraid.
Brent.
Oh, no, Brent.
Yeah.
You might get... there's a couple... All right. What is the make and model of the camera she's using to film him?
It's a Sony Super Beta movie.
Boom, you deserve that.
Yeah, that was one of mine as well. Yes. Okay, so that's 5-4.
The fact that we get some of these answers is a testament to how sad we are when we look at these films.
Right, okay. I will say, let's go for... I'll give you two options here.
Okay, A.
I've got to decide which two questions I'm going to ask first. Okay, A or B?
A.
What is the name of the company that is funding him?
It's annoying because I know it.
Right.
It's not on my screen, by the way.
Good.
I know it begins with R.
Right.
I do know that.
Right.
Because I did write it down, but I promise it is not on my screen. Rock. I'm getting confused because there's a couple of bits and there's in my head I've got two things. I've got something like Bartok and I've got something like Rockwell. Rockwell?
Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
Bartok.
Fuck's sake.
Yeah, Bartok Industries or Bartok Science.
Where's
Industries?
Rockwell come from then?
I've absolutely no idea. So that's it, 6-4.
Oh. Very close.
Very, very, very close.
Okay, some that I didn't ask. No. What make espresso machine does he have?
Famer?
Yeah. What percentage of the stocking is organic matter?
0.0002%. I don't know.
0.00001%.
Pretty damn close there.
Yeah.
Nice.
What colour is Ronnie's duvet set when we first go to her apartment?
Yellow.
Pink.
Nice.
What animal's on her fireplace?
No idea.
Horse. Where does they? She suggest they could possibly go for a holiday.
Florida.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the publishing company?
Publishing company.
Yeah. So you got whatever the magazine was called.
Particle.
Again. Yeah. The actual publishing company it comes from.
Well, the building's the Monolith building. Well, I don't know.
It's Monolith Publishing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
All right, those are my
nice
questions.
I had what vehicle did he puke up on when he was a child?
Tricycle.
Yeah. Name of the corrosive enzyme?
Zed.
Vomit drop. How does Ronnie describe the steak that's gone through the telepod?
Synthetic.
Yeah. What's the name of the coffee machine? How old was he when he nearly won a Nobel Prize with his team?
20.
20.
You kind of played the man because you know some of the ones that I'd get. These aren't even questions.
At the party, how many other interviews did she have lined up?
Three.
What's the tune he plays on the piano when they go back to the...
I don't know.
I see, it's the end of Greece. Love is a many splendid thing.
Well, how am I meant to know that?
What percentage of the stocking is silicon?
37.001%. Yeah.
Where else is she going to take the story to if the particle doesn't publish it?
Just a bit of an O, maybe?
Yeah, Omni.
Yeah.
What is the first baboon's plasma volume?
I don't know.
2,032 millilitres. What's the name of a supermarket opposite the place where they buy the necklace?
Oh, I don't know.
Royal Food Centre. What brand of cigarettes does she smoke?
Marlboro Red.
Yep. How long has it been when Seth phones her that they haven't seen each other?
A month.
Well, 4 weeks. Yeah. And how many times does he punch the wall?
Three.
Five.
Okay.
So that was my questions.
Yeah, that was pretty close, actually. That was really close.
They were all right this week, actually.
I'm enjoying the impossible quiz.
Me too.
So, because it is just stupid stuff. You're like, it's a fluke as to now whether we're going to get it or not, because it's like,
it's
we've seen, because the fact that we do these questions afterwards shows us that either of us could have won that.
Yeah.
It's about choosing the right question.
But anyway. It's 3-2 to me, and I'm very happy about that.
Last orders.
Last orders at the bar, please. Last orders at the bar.
So to sum up then, do you want me to go first this week?
I think it's me, actually, isn't it?
Is it? Oh, yeah, of course. All right.
If you don't mind.
Fine.
It was good. Right, you?
Yeah, great.
No, I don't know. I went in hopeful that I wouldn't, because I enjoyed this when I was, I think I rented it on video.
Right.
When I was probably about 15. And I really enjoyed it. And I'm not one for these sort of films. And I'm glad that I enjoyed it back then. I thought, am I going to ruin that? All I did last night was ruin my appetite for burgers. So
that's all right. We'll make up for that now.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I had a good time. Good. And it was a great film to watch. I'll watch it again. I enjoyed myself. And especially the masterful performance of Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah. I can't argue with that.
Yeah. So... I think scoring it, I don't know, I'm going to go 3/4 of the way. I'm going to say a 7/10 for me, actually.
Nice, nice. Yeah. Okay, yeah, I mean, I, like I said, I hadn't watched this film, as I said for previous films, I haven't watched this film this century, and I don't understand why, because I absolutely loved it. I think it stands up really, really, really well. It's visceral, it's typical Cronenberg with the body horror, it's gross, but the sound design is great, the score's great. The effects on the whole are great. There are some that don't hold up so well. Jeff Goldblum's performance is out of this world. You know, the film cost in the region $15 million to make and recouped over $60 million. So it's done something right. It's emotional, but I can't give it a 10 because I don't think it's worthy of it. But it's...
No, I see what you mean. I see your dilemma.
But I loved it. But I'm going to go as near as damn it and give it a 9.
Oh, that's cool.
I think it's a great, great film. And I can't wait to watch it again.
There we go. 16 out of 20, though. That's
not bad, is it?
Very good.
Yeah.
And high praise indeed from Darren himself.
I loved it.
Great.
Everything about it.
Awesome. So, well, listen, folks, tell us, what did you think about it? I mean, did you agree with Darren? Do you agree with myself? Or are we both completely wrong and it deserves a 2? You know, get in touch.
I would hope not.
Mean, email us, podcast at A's Adventure. You can always find us on Facebook as well and Twitter, etc., etc. There's lots of places you can
and
get in touch.
Share us with all your friends. But yeah, as Matt says, get in touch. It's always good to hear from you. We need to print off some of these emails and read them out.
Definitely.
We've not done that in a while. But
also, folks, I mean, there's other ways you can support the show. But literally, telling a friend is one of the best ways you can support the show. Another way is Patreon. You go to patreon.com/80sAdventure.
It costs as much as a cup of coffee every month.
Well, speaking of a cup of coffee, Darren, we now have a coffee page.
Ooh.
So you go to ko-fi.com, coffee.com.
Snazzy.
coffee.com/80s adventure.
Yeah.
And you can buy us, we're not going to call it a coffee there, we're going to call it, you can buy us a beer.
Buy us a beer.
So it's a one-off thing. If you want to just buy us a beer, and we'll give you a little thank you on here just to say, you know,
absolutely,
thank you for the beer. In fact, you might be buying the beer that we may be drinking.
It'd be your fault.
So yeah, coffee.com/80s adventure.
Nice.
So that was The Fly. I'm glad we did that. I enjoyed that.
Me too. What are we doing next week? Let me know.
The tagline for next week. There's a few, but I'm going to take this one.
Mm-hmm.
It's the craziest flight you'll ever take.
Ooh. Mm. Flight of the Navigator.
Ooh, that would be a good one, though.
Oh, Space Camp.
Your camp.
How dare you?
Winner of no Academy Awards.
Oh, The Fly. Oh, no, it did win.
So, yeah, if you would like to know what film that is, mm-hmm. then you can check out our Facebook page on Wednesday when the trailer will drop.
Oh,
You're
a bad man.
I'm a bad man. So that's it, I guess. Darren, anything else from you?
Nope.
Right, okay then. Let's go and drink more. But until next time, I have been Matt.
And I am Darren. Cheersy! Falling out of the top three this week to number 7, it's Papa Don't Preach from Mama Donna. Who the fuck's Mama Donna?